You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our favorite fidget spinner is your mom. I'm your guide, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you enjoy your trip here in the Midside, please tell a friend like Midsider Alfred did this past week. He told a friend, and his friend said she loved the show. That's a great way to support the show. Alternately, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, or support us at patreon.com/themidside, or themidside.com/patreon. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Well, hello there, fine fellow. I love this new format of the introduction. It gets right.
Yeah, we worked real hard. Yeah, we worked real hard on this.
Yeah, it's less of a charade. Yes.
Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
That's it. Just James Elliot. No. How are you doing? Just. Anyway, it's less of a charade.
We talked about this pre-show. You're being such a Dr. Spaz right now.
All right. Well, I'm not good. Thank you for asking. yeah, it's been a tougher week for me personally. But then on top of that, you've probably heard Chris Cornell died this week, and he was actually my favorite singer. So, and he was only 52. And so I was really hoping for, you know, a lot more years of lyrics and singing and just musical talent coming from him. And, now there'll never be more. So that's,
yeah, it's tragic. It's very young that he died. And didn't he have a show that night? And then like he went home and hung himself in his hotel room.
You know, that's what I've heard. As of now, I don't know anything for sure, kind of, because maybe we do know for sure, but I just haven't been looking. I just heard that I haven't been looking that hard at this yet. Like, yeah. So maybe I heard that he killed himself, but you know, I didn't hear anything absolutely confirming that.
That's what I heard. Yeah. Either way, it's tragic. I mean, he was Soundgarden and who else?
And Audioslave, which I actually really liked Audioslave a lot more. And I used to listen to the same three albums of Audioslave just on loop for like 3 years. Just because I loved his voice combined with that really intense low guitar that they use in Audioslave. But yeah. It's really too bad that Audioslave will never happen again. Like I always thought they'd probably get together again and do maybe one more album. But if they do, it really won't be Audioslave.
Yeah. Well, these sort of things are unpredictable when these sort of deaths happen. And that's this unpredictability is something I want to talk about before we get to the news. And I want to talk about it with a higher level. There's a higher level of unpredictability I've been noticing. If you've been following the Midside on social media, you saw that I posted a quote from Jordan Peterson on the Joe Rogan Experience this past week. This episode, at least in my circles, this episode's been really popular. It's like 3 hours long. If you want to listen to it, I would recommend it. It's very similar to the Midside. It was a very similar. I felt like I was listening to the Midside on steroids, basically. And one thing in it specifically stuck out to me. And the thing that stuck out to me is Peterson kept repeating this idea that there are cycles of basically calm and rationality and chaos, and that we're in a period of chaos right now. You know, he brings up how Trump is president and that represents chaos. And, you know, I don't know a lot about this theory. I don't know where he got it from. This guy's a clinical psychologist, so he clearly is well-read. And from the episode, he's clearly, you know, clearly very educated, very, very educated. So I don't know a lot about this theory, but I do know from an inductive level that the idea of our world currently being chaos really rings true to me. I mean, so let me just give examples. And this could completely just be because I'm in California, But here's a couple examples from the other day. This is just leaving the gym. This is one 10-minute car ride. So I get in my car and I, you know, I go to the tow booth and I give them my ticket and they say, you don't owe anything because you were here for under 2 hours. And I go out and I start driving out the path out of the parking garage. And this is a parking garage like across the street from Disneyland. And there's no crosswalk in the middle of the this little road out of the parking garage. But as I'm driving out, there's an old Asian man just standing there in the middle of the road. And I just stop. And I just wait. And I'm just like, is this guy going to move? I mean, I could have driven through him, I suppose. But, like, there's just a random Asian guy. So then I just wait for him to go, and he passes. Sort of like cows. This is like, I'm waiting, you ever drive through, like, farmland, and, like, cows just cross the road? And you're like, oh, there are cows here now. And then, you know, so I get by him, and I drive to my house. And there's one part near my apartment. And there's one part near my apartment where I have to do a U-turn. And there's a left-hand turn arrow. And, you know, that turns green at the beginning of the other of the same light going the same way being green. And then eventually the left-hand turn arrow just disappears and everything's just green. So you have to, you know, use your own discretion. If there are cars coming or not, you can turn left. Well, I get there and there's a guy in front of me and there's no one coming in the other direction. And it's just the solid green, no arrow. And the guy's just sitting there, just sitting there. So I pull an Adam Carolla because I've heard he's done this before on the show. And in the moment, I just go around him and turn left. And then immediately he sees that I have turned left and, like, starts following me. He's like, oh, wait, I can turn left? So I do believe that listening to Jordan Peterson say that this is an age of chaos made me want to go around that guy. Because it's sort of like, well, if he's not going to follow the rules and it's just chaos, I just have to do, in the moment, whatever is best for me to protect myself and protect my values. But it kind of makes me wonder, you know, am I just crazy? Is it just California? And the answer to am I just crazy is always yes, I know, Daniel. And isn't this a way you're sort of treating other people sort of like animals? Like I'm comparing the Asian guy to a cow walking across the street. But it sort of is that way. I mean, the guy's sort of an animal just acting on emotions and instincts.
Your one point of evidence to accept a deterministic view of history is one Asian driver not turning when he's supposed to?
No. The second guy was Hispanic. The guy in the middle of the street was an old random Asian.
How dare you assume that second man's race, Daniel? How dare you?
California bad driver. I assume Asian, I'm right.
No, I'm not arguing for a deterministic view of history. I'm not familiar with the theory. I'm just saying it seems true to me that we're living in chaos right now. Like I go out into the world and I never know what's going to happen. And every day something ridiculous that I couldn't have predicted happens.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, your story may be kind of anecdotal, but what I'm drawing from it was, I mean, it's not a sign of chaos because there was an Asian man in the road. And it's not a sign of chaos because someone wasn't paying attention to the road and, like, and, you know, wasn't turning on a green light. It's a sign of chaos because you felt as though, like, okay, well, when other people, I feel now that when other people aren't breaking the rules, that now gives me license to break the rules just for my own self-interest. That was, you're just remarking on the attitude you had approaching the situation. Not that the situation itself was particularly chaotic, right?
All right, now you're being Dr. Drew and you're shitting on my point.
I'm rolling with your point.
Anecdotal to be funny to make my point? Do you need me to explain that?
No, but it's like, to me,
I just don't want you to adopt worldviews based on Asian drivers. That's all I'm.
Yeah, I mean, the story to me isn't chaotic, but the way you kind of responded is sort of a sign that's like that your view is like, okay, this is a chaotic world. It's kind of just there's me and there's the world and the rules are crumbling. I have to just get around this guy. It's not, you know, I can't honk at him and wait for him to abide by the rules. I'm just going to do what I have to do. And regardless of whether that was the right decision, it reflects your attitude that we're in an age of chaos. I mean, think of Trump. This is, you know, going around the slow driver on a presidential level. You know, we the Republicans basically said, no, all bets are off. The media don't allow us to see the facts anymore. Normal Republicans do nothing. We need a wrecking ball that'll just smash Hillary into oblivion because otherwise we're going to have another 8 years of Obama, and it's not going to be America anymore if that happens. And that, right or wrong, that was the attitude of chaos the Republicans felt like they had to take this election cycle. And so that's where we are in Kekistan.
You agree with me. Thank you, Daniel.
I don't know what Jordan Peterson specifically was talking about, but the language being used is similar to a book by William Strauss and Neil Howe called The Fourth Turning, where basically they hypothesize that history goes through these four different cycles, which they call the high cycle, the awakening cycle, the unraveling cycle, and the crisis cycle. And basically every crisis cycle in American history has involved a period of turmoil and upending, and then it resulted in a war, and then we came out of it much better. Just for context, the previous three fourth turnings in America were the stock market crash, and then basically ending with World War II and the start of NATO. Prior to that, it was slavery, and then the Civil War ending in the Fifth Amendment being ratified, and then before that, it was the Revolutionary War and the Constitution, etc. And so the theory is that we're now in a fourth turning, which was precipitated by the financial crisis, and basically what the hell is going to happen next? Like, is there going to be a war, and then what's going to be the outcome of that?
So does our cycle ever link up with Mars's cycle?
We do spend a lot of time together, and that tends to happen, you know.
I just figured if it was any planet, it would be the red planet that we would link up with.
It's very true. Red tide rising.
I don't understand any of this.
It's a menstruation joke, James.
Jeez, James, you're having a hard time today, man. Like, we've had to explain three things to you already.
I think James is just on a different level from us. We're just talking complete shit at the moment.
All right, do you want to continue to talk some complete shit about all the complete shit that happened this
week? I want to say very quickly that I am not a fourth turner. I mean, I read some of the book because someone recommended it, and I found the hypothesis interesting. I think it's a little bit deterministic, but I'd be interested in if Justin is now a fourth turner, along with Steve Bannon and some others. But
I feel like you guys have, in this segment, implicitly linked me with Trump, and I'm not comfortable with this.
Implicitly? You basically campaign for the guy. Just kidding. All right, let's move on.
You're not a fourth turner, Daniel, because you're a first turner on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So let's turn to you and the news with Daniel T. Richards, even though that's slightly redundant. Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad.
These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fact. Speaking of Justin's favorite political candidate of all time, Trump.
Come on, man!
Trump!
Trump-a-dump.
Guess what? He's in trouble this week.
He's in trouble? Is he in trouble?
That's right. He's in trouble this week as he apparently revealed highly classified information to Russian foreign minister and ambassador in a meeting in the Oval Office. This is according to the Washington Post. The information the president relayed had been provided by a U.S. partner through an intelligence sharing arrangement considered so sensitive that details have been withheld from allies and tightly restricted even within the U.S. government, officials said. And this partner had not given the U.S. permission to share the material with Russia, and officials said Trump's decision to do so endangers cooperation from an ally that has access to the inner workings of the Islamic State. After Trump's meeting, senior White House officials took steps to contain the damage, placing calls to the CIA and National Security Agency. In fact, the National Security Advisor came out and gave like a 48-second press conference where he's like, didn't happen, lies, nothing happened, nothing to see here, move along. And then, of course, Trump the next day tweeted that, of course, it did happen, and he had every right to do it and come at me, bro. Which is basically a cycle with the White House, if anyone's noticed, which is scandal, White House denial, and then Trump confirmation, but go fuck yourselves, follows that. So
it's a third turn.
When does he fire the NSA guy?
When does he fire the NSA guy? I don't think he will, because the NSA guy is willing to take a bullet for him there. So, a metaphorical bullet. But the point is, to be very clear, this is if Trump did reveal classified information, this is not illegal. Because apparently the president does have broad discretion to declassify things. So, Justin, illegal or not, couple things. One, stupid or liar with Trump, and then, which is a perennial question. And then two, would you entertain the concept of impeaching this guy?
I mean, to answer your first question, because I'm not sure about the impeachment thing, and I'll build to that. I still fall back on my theory from last episode. I think pathologically he needs attention. And it's just, I think he was in front of these Russian people, and he was like, how do I be cool in front of the Russians? I know, I'll declassify information. It's like a sitcom almost, like, uh-oh, this is the episode that Trump declassifies information. And then it spiraled into a scandal, and the NSA came out and denied it, and he was like, how do I get more attention from the American people? Oh, I'll tweet that I actually did this, and that'll cause a great ruckus. And I don't think he's being so explicit about it, but I think it's sort of just like his coping mechanism. And is that stupid or liar? I think this is a rare case where it's both. I mean, this kind of behavior is incredibly stupid, but it also requires a deception of reality. I don't know if he knows he's lying. Like, I think he's that self-deluded, but he's definitely lying. So there's, you know, there's a line there. And as far as impeachment, I mean, I don't know enough about impeachment and everything to say if we should or not, but here's the problem I'm having with this whole impeachment thing. I don't want the left to be right just because they're fucking, they are liars and they are evil and they've been pushing for impeachment the whole time. So it's sort of like, I don't know, maybe it's because I've embraced this chaos thing, but it's sort of like, I'd rather Trump burn the place down than to give it to the left and they, you know, use it for their nefarious purposes.
Be 100% clear in case you're not sure how government works. It's not that Hillary would become president if Trump is impeached. Just
right. I'm arguing long-term culturally. They'll be like, yay, we won. We used social pressure and social media to get the president impeached.
Yeah.
And then we'll see more Antifa people running around hitting people with sticks. And, you know, they'll think like, oh, wait, we can do this now because we'll just go online and say, you know, say something and people will believe it eventually if we just repeat it. I don't want that. To me is a greater danger than Trump right now. That, to me, is the greatest danger facing our society. So I'm not sold on the impeaching Trump thing because I just think there's much bigger threats out there. And I understand that he's, like, defiling the office of the presidency, but I think we need to maybe own up to the fact that we defiled the office of the presidency long ago. I think we know who defiled it, literally, long ago.
I mean, look, Clinton fucked an intern. Trump is fucking all of us. So
right, that's what I'm saying. It's just escalation, right?
Yeah. I don't like where the cigar is being placed, though. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, James, I know you have some thoughts about impeachment. I saw you Facebooking about it.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of myself. I made a bumper sticker that said Pence Ryan 2017.
Adorable.
Because think about this. Entertain this for a second. President Mike Pence.
Pence,
you know,
yes.
Pence. I keep thinking Penske.
He doesn't own the oil change company, Penske. That's not him.
Right.
That's what I thought his bumper sticker was. I was like, I don't get it. Like, what? I thought his name was Pence, not Penske.
Yeah.
So, wait, I misspelled it in the bumper sticker?
No. You, in your comment, you did, though.
Oh, right. Yeah, because I keep thinking Penske. But
wait, Brief change though. You know what you did get wrong when you posted it though? So I actually bought a drink at Starbucks and you posted about some Oreo mint drink.
Uh-huh.
It is not an Oreo mint drink, and the barista at Starbucks, Kate with a C, wanted me to tell you, James, that you're wrong. It's thin mint, it's not Oreo mint. So that is a message from the barista Kate from the Fullerton Starbucks, Kate with a C, not a K.
All right, well, I'll issue a retraction and apology as soon as we're done recording, Justin.
He sounds like a C. Okay.
So, but think about it. President Pence, however you freaking pronounce it, think about it. He's just a Republican. That's it. And then the vice president would be Paul Ryan. Imagine that for a moment.
Oh, we don't know that. It's not like everyone gets shifted over. He'd have to be
appointed. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the Speaker of the House that just I thought everything got shifted over. Yeah.
Secretary President Pro Tem of the Senate. You are now Speaker of the House.
Right. That doesn't make
any
sense.
How many times do we have to impeach people before Linda McMahon becomes president?
She's pretty far down the list. but theoretically
she's happen. The lone survivor. But I still agree with Justin, maybe for slightly different reasons, though, it's kind of the same reason. It's just, we elected this guy. I don't like the idea of setting a precedent that the president can simply be removed when we just kind of got cold feet and we want someone else now. He's shit, but he didn't do anything illegal. Like, there's no high crime or misdemeanor here. You can't just remove him. I think it sets a dangerous precedent if you just kind of remove him on some kind of foggy notion of general incompetence, which Trump does fit the bill for that. But I'm still just uncomfortable with that kind of precedent that the will of the people can be overturned by the Senate, who would conduct the impeachment proceeding.
All right.
Well, it's even deeper than that in this world of social justice. You're agreeing with me, James. You just went one step backwards and explained it a little bit better. You explained the base governmental principle, the base societal principle. But I'm saying combine that with this idea that we have a group of people in this world who just use social pressure to get their agenda across. So if we have those two things happen together, it's basically whenever they don't get their way, they're just going to stomp their feet and cross their arms and throw a fit until they get what they want if we set this precedent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. It would be the ultimate muffin. I'll be that guy.
Okay.
I'm fine. I'm happy to admit it. I hope we do impeach him. I hope we impeach him tomorrow. I hope we impeach him sooner rather than later. Core principle that I'm working on here is that we are not a democracy. Yes, it is about the will of the people, but he didn't win the popular vote. He won the system, which is good. That's how it should run. I like that rule of law, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not necessarily the will of the people that he stay. And I don't think it has to be anyway, because we're a republic. And I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that requires us to maintain a leader who has gross incompetence. If the people's representatives, who they elected, also, by the way, decide that this guy is unfit to be president, I don't think high crimes and misdemeanors refer specifically to the breaking of laws. I think there's, I don't want to get into it now, but I think there's some good evidence to suggest that the founders didn't think that either. And I think general gross incompetence is enough to impeach this guy. The fact that we are 4 months into the presidency and the guy's basically bungled his way to this point, can we do this for another 3.5 years? Can we? Can the Republic sustain this incompetent jackass at the head of the state for 3.5 more years at minimum?
But I am going to say something. Even though I agree with everything you just said about his incompetence and us bumbling, I'm going to say something that's controversial in this day and age. We put up with Obama for 8 years and look what he did. Look at what healthcare is now. You're going to tell me that's not generally incompetent?
There's a difference between having bad ideas and them being ideas that we can combat with other ideas, and just general gross incompetence where it's impossible to battle this with ideas. It's impossible to do anything democratically to fix this other than kick the guy out.
That's interesting.
I want to know where the line is between having this kind of incompetence that Trump has and the incompetence of not being connected with reality that you have such bad ideas. And the example I'm going to use is play calling in football. If you generally are so incompetent that you always call running plays when you should throw the ball, you have bad ideas. That's what you think would succeed. So you deserve to be fired for it. But if you're a play caller who's so incompetent that it's random, you're more like Trump, where you're just calling whatever fucking thing, so you should get fired too. So why is the same thing not upheld with the presidency? Why? And I know that the greater cultural reason is relativism, and that's the point I'm building towards. But why do we not say that that's generally incompetent? That a president passes a law that's so bad that it undermines the society going forward, but that's not considered incompetent, and this is the only thing that's considered incompetent?
Because one is competing ideas. It's not I think your analogy is flawed. It's not just a guy who only calls run plays because he thinks run plays are bad. It's a guy like, Ken Wisenhut, who believes that a run-first offense is the correct offense. And he does it in an integrated manner, and he tries to get the right pieces. And you may disagree with that in a passing league, or you may say that that's even a greater flawed philosophy even in a general league, but it is a philosophy that people want and owners hire for and players play for, etc. This
but
is
if you
not that.
Not win championships. You're incompetent.
This is.
I would argue that's incompetent.
This is the coach of the Browns giving the playbook to fucking Jets or whoever, and then not calling plays, but being like, "That batter's out," and that guy just got a hat trick, and it's fucking. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's not even playing football.
I agree with what you're saying, but I'm saying they're just degrees of incompetence. That's all
I'm
saying.
That's true, Justin, but what you're missing about what Daniel's saying is that you cannot politically oppose Trump's kind of incompetence, whereas in Obama you can at least there's this idea that we can have a national dialogue and say these policies are not the correct policies, whereas with Trump there's no policies. It's just a bunch of shit happening.
There's nothing we can vote on to stop him from declassifying information to the Russians. The only thing we can do is advocate for his removal.
Has Trump done anything we could even vote on indirectly, a la Republic? Like, you know, has he put any bills? Oh, there's the healthcare bill, but that was shit. Like, he's basically not even, like, doing his job as president for ramming legislation through and promoting it. He's basically not doing that. The only real things he's done of any goodness are his executive orders, where he gets to just say what he wants.
It's executive orders and firing James Comey and bungling this thing with the Russians in terms of classified information. And then the healthcare bill, which was fucked up from the beginning and will never pass the Senate, and thus nothing will change. So, look, I do – the one element that I agree with you on, Justin, is that I like the fact that perhaps some people will be turned off by governmental power by having this nut job at the helm. I.e., they may rethink their slightly leftist ideas of giving the president specifically too much power because it could end up in the hands of this douche, which it has. But I don't think it's worth it in the long run. I think we're just—it's going to do much more harm than good to have an incompetent dolt, quote unquote, running the country. So.
But this is why I didn't vote. I agree with everything you just said, but this is why I didn't vote, because I literally see no difference between Hillary and Trump. I think it's just as dangerous that we grant legitimacy to people like Hillary and we say, oh, these are ideas to be argued with. And because we can put on the facade of an argument with people who aren't interested in arguing with us, they're legitimate and Trump isn't. I see equal illegitimacy on both sides here. And I've always said that the debate should be between conservatism and libertarianism, and that's just the way I see it. I just think it's dangerous that we sit here and we go, oh well, we can argue with the Obama's ideas and Hillary's ideas, so it's okay. That's not incompetence. That's just what I think.
Well, speaking of incompetence, here's something maybe we can find some common ground on. Texas man sues his date for texting during Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes, indeed. A man out of Austin, has sued his date for $17.31 after he brought her to a 3D screening of the Marvel film Guardians of the Galaxy, and she wouldn't put away her phone. Yes, he said she texted 10 to 20 times, and then she ignored his requests to have her put the phone away. And the court document says, while damages sought are modest, the principle is important, as defendant's behavior is a threat to civilized society.
It's kind
Justin,
of true.
Justin, I ask you, woke or joke? No, I'm just kidding. What do you think? Does he have a case?
No, this is the easiest defense in the entire world. Maybe you shouldn't have brought her to such a boring-ass movie and she wouldn't have been texting.
Wait, Justin, you're on her side?
What?
You're on her side?
Nothing, keep going.
I'm not on anyone's side. This is two retarded people who went to the movies with each other and got mad at each other, and now they're doing something retarded. Like, this is I'm on nobody's side here. The point I'm making is, though, like, I'm pointing out the retardation. Like, you went to a shit movie where nothing happens for the first three quarters and you got mad at her for being bored and going on her phone. Like, why? Why? Maybe you should have been like, why did I go to such a bad movie? And if you could be that distracted by her, like, I don't know. It's just like, Yeah, it's a sunk cost, but have you ever been on a bad date before where you're just like, that's a sunk cost? Well, like, you don't sue her for it. A
couple things. One is I did, at the end of this article, expect to read, like, update. There is now a countersuit for $5,000 in psychological damages after having to see that piece of shit known as Guardians of the Galaxy 2. But there wasn't. Alas. My second comment is, if this guy liked this girl, then this is totally a missed opportunity. Which is, you see she's bored. As a human being with a pulse, you must also have some modicum of boredom at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe you like it, but it's not riveting.
And then you finger blast her in the theater, is that what you're saying?
Well, that's one route. You just, you know, you grab her by the... But, you know, the other route is...
Do you show her your popcorn and, like, there's a surprise and she reaches in and she finds the hole in the bottom of the popcorn?
Are these all tactics you've personally... Justin, this would explain so much about your life. No, this is what you do, is you see she's bored, you make the inductive, inference that she is bored, and you say to her, hey, I'm not digging this either, do you want to get out of here? And you eat the $17 and you go do something more interesting, maybe each other. You know, it just seems like a retarded move here. Plus, if I was the judge in this case, I would not only throw the suit out, but I would fine the man for a frivolous lawsuit. This is nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the greater point here, right? Why are you bringing a girl, a date, a woman, whatever fucking age you are or language? I don't care if you're 15 or 45. Why are you bringing your date, gay, straight, trans, whatever the fuck you are, why are you bringing your date to Guardians of the Galaxy 2? Like, are we this brainwashed as a society that we're like, oh, this is a good movie to bring my date to? Like, I can understand Fast and the Furious if, like, you're both in the cars and things, but, like, I don't think Marvel movies are good date movies. Maybe I'm the only one.
He's in Austin, so maybe they're both into Chris Pratt. It's a gay joke about Austin.
Yeah, I know, but nobody likes Chris Pratt nowadays.
It's because everyone in Austin's gay. James, do you have anything on this? I don't know why you would.
Just a note, just to Justin, like, can we stop doing this? I know I don't participate in the story selection that much, but why are we doing this, Justin?
Justin?
Because this is how entitled our society has become. That this fucking guy does something stupid and he's with someone else who does something stupid and they want to get compensated for it. Like, back in the day when this shit happened, like, have you never been on a date with a girl who was on her phone the whole time?
Well, I never had, because I was dating in like the 2009 to 11 era, so.
I don't think that's ever happened to me. Like, I don't think so.
Well, it's happened to me, and I told her to stay off of her phone. I said, you know, I'm here seeing you. I would appreciate it.
Did she say, okay, yes, father? Hey,
that's funny.
Stay off your phone.
No, my only comparable experience is the exact opposite of that, which is I wanted her to shut up.
Okay, just stop.
From the moment we sat down, she said, why the fuck do you like Ayn Rand? And then she yelled at me for an hour and a half.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's my favorite story of yours. And then she wanted to fuck you.
Yeah, and then afterwards she was like, oh, when can I see you again? And she was like trying to get me to go to her place. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Anyway, I know why Justin
picked this
story. I would
prefer that to a girl on her phone the whole time. Like, woman on her phone the whole time.
Yeah, stop saying girl, you misogynist.
I'm trying to correct my vocabulary.
I know why Justin picked this story. There's one reason and one reason alone, and it is so he could bash on Guardians of the Galaxy. The end.
I missed that somehow. Not sure how.
I mean, that may or may not be true. I cannot confirm or deny that. Also, to make fun of stupid people.
I am 100% on board with psychologizing Justin on this particular pick.
How is this not farce? Somebody sued somebody else for texting in a movie theater during a shitty movie. Everything about this story is a joke.
Yeah. This story, the next one, some of it's not a joke, but it's still farcical. Did James just...
I'm sorry, it was a really big one. Oh my god, I tried to hold it in and it made it worse.
Top-notch pod.
James is just... he's just fucking derailing the podcast this week.
I'm sorry.
He's hit peak farce, to use a term that Justin fucking despises.
I do hate the term peak farce.
You do?
Peak farce will never, yes, it will never be reached.
So you're a peak farce denier.
So, college student stabs her boyfriend, and she is going to be spared prison time because of her, quote, extraordinary talent.
God damn it, Justin.
Not in bed, but just to clarify. This is an Oxford University student, Lavinia, 24. She stabbed her boyfriend in the leg with a bread knife, which I'm assuming would hurt. If I'm thinking the right knife. That's the one you cut loaves of bread with? That's a fucking outrageous knife. During a raging feud, which was reportedly fueled by drugs and alcohol, she also allegedly threw a glass jar and laptop at the man, who was a PhD student who she met on Tinder during the fight. But she wants to be a heart surgeon, and so the judge says basically that it seems to me that if this was a one-off, a complete one-off, to prevent this extraordinary able young lady from not following her long-held desire to enter the profession she wishes would be a sentence which would be too severe. So, Justin, what do you think? Is it okay to stab people in the leg if you're going to be a heart surgeon?
No, it's clearly not. And I mean, that's the point I wanted to make about this story is a lot of people are turning this into a gender issue that they say she's getting away with it because she's a woman. And, you know, they're like comparing it to the Brock Turner case. Like, well, he was an exceptional athlete. So why didn't he get leniency in his set or he did or whatever? I don't know, whatever. But the thing is, you can't like make exceptions. Rules are rules for a reason. Like, is this really somebody you want operating on your heart? Can you just imagine like open heart surgery? She just throws a laptop at your heart.
Did your heart get in a drug and alcohol fueled fight with her?
I mean, it might, if that's why you're having open heart surgery.
So circular. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, who thinks this is a good idea? And how do these people become judges, Daniel? How does this happen that, like, somebody who's this fucked up can become a judge?
Well, it's the UK, so the only qualification to be a judge there is that you look good in a powdered wig.
That's
such a dumb joke, James. Stop laughing.
But it reminds me. So I went to the Getty recently, and I love looking at the old pictures that they the old drawings. And I see people in powdered wigs, and I pretend they're George Washington.
What?
All of them?
No,
that's
I look
it.
People who look vaguely. I look for people who look vaguely like George Washington. I'm like, oh, that's a reference to George Washington.
You just and then you just the Getty,
and you just kind of like Washington. you just like snigger to yourself as you do this.
In one of the pictures who look like George, in one of the paintings who look like George Washington, too, I turned it into a game.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you really put the gay in game. This is so. I'll be the counterpoint here. Maybe James also wants to be the counterpoint here.
I don't think he likes this story. Did you hear him say "God damn it, Justin" when you started reading it?
I think that's just his general reaction to you.
This is the worst episode.
I love this pod. We give good pod.
I give good pod.
Please don't give us one star based on this episode.
Go listen to the other ones. We're much better than this. Usually, I promise. That's a lie. The thing I'll say about this is that, you know, we don't know much about the injuries from this guy. We just know that she was stabbed in the leg with a bread knife. That can mean many things. Like, there was a story the other day about how Mike Pence punched a kid in the face. And then you go watch the video, and, like, he's giving a talk, and he raises his arms, and, like, the bottom 1/17th of his sleeve basically brushes the kid's nose. And it's like, so, like, stabbing him in the leg could mean, you know, all the way through to the other side. It could mean, like, just barely broke the skin. And we don't know what it is. He probably didn't have his leg amputated, or we would have heard that in this story. I think, and this is sort of an Adam Carolla principle, like, you should get some dispensation for having, up to that point, been a good human being. And there is some of that in the law. But I think that there should be more of that in the law and in life in general, which is, okay, yeah, certainly if you kill someone, that's a whole different thing. But if you were in an angry, alcohol-fueled fight with your boyfriend and you do something ridiculous, you should have to serve some penalty. There should be some penalty. But I don't know if, you know, condemning you the rest of your life to never do the thing you've been studying for however many years is quite comparable. I think that's an unnecessary punishment.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just my experience. But, like, I generally live a very moral and upstanding life, and then I do one thing wrong and get like destroyed for it. So maybe I'm just vindictive, and I don't understand the double standard. Maybe that's all it is.
Get destroyed for it, eh? I don't speak gay slang, but that sounds horrible.
Oh, wow, that's original.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of original, the left has succeeded in forcing yet another human being to recant a quote-unquote controversial comment. this time, it's the woman who won Miss USA. Her name is Kara McCullough, and I believe she was representing D.C., ironically. And during the pageant, when asked if health care is a right or a privilege, she said, quote, "I'm definitely going to say it's a privilege. As a government employee, I am granted health care, and I see firsthand that for one to have health care, you need to have jobs. So therefore, we need to continue to cultivate the environment that we're given the opportunity to have health care as well as jobs to all the American citizens worldwide," which, if you were listening closely, is almost a complete thought. She also said later on that she disavowed feminism. She wanted to call it equalism because she wanted all people to be equals. So she went on to Good Morning America, and basically after a bunch of Twitter harassment and statements by leftist folks, she said, to clarify her comments, quote, "I am privileged to have health care, and I do believe that it should be a right." So, Justin, one, should she have had to recant? And then two, is healthcare a right?
I mean, the obvious answer to number two is no, it's not a right. I mean, I think we all agree with that.
Why don't you answer them in order,
then? Because Justin, that one's boring, so I'm getting that one out of the way, and I'm sure James will answer it or some shit. But the first one, should she have had to recant? No. This whole story is a combination of everything I've been saying over this episode so far. This is what I'm talking about. You made a joke that it's almost a complete thought. Her thought is more incompetent than Obama's idea of passing nationalized health care. More competent than that you need to have a job to have health care. It's not even you need to have a job to have health care. If you can afford to buy health care, you can have health care. Health care is not something that exists in reality. And it's just like you have to have it. That is a service that has been created by people. You have to exchange goods and services for that service. That's the way it works. That's the way reality works. Should she have had to apologize for saying that? No, but that's what I'm saying, where I don't want the precedent set that we can just let these people who just run their mouth when there's something they don't like to have that happen.
Coherent, yes. James?
I mean, what really bothers me about this is just that This woman was, I mean, look at her statements. She was a liberal. She meant, if you look at that first statement, she didn't mean it as a privilege in the way that a conservative or libertarian would mean it. She meant it's a privilege in the general sense. She didn't really understand the buzzword being used there. The woman's a liberal. But the thing is, just she's kind of one of the more, you know, individualistic ones that are, you know, who are thinking for herself. And so as a result, she thinks about her own ideas and she says, maybe we shouldn't call it feminism. We should call it, equalism, or, you know, whatever it is she said, you know, which reflects this kind of first-handed perspective on her own opinions, which the left absolutely will not tolerate. They'll make her recant and conform to the orthodoxy immediately, which she did.
Although To be fair, the equalism thing is not a first-handed thing. That's a thing that's starting to go around now. A lot of women are starting to say that, younger women on the internet.
Oh, really?
Say that. Yeah. Well, because they want to distance themselves from modern feminism. I mean, nobody wants to. The only people who don't want you to admit it are feminists, because they're either deluded, dishonest, or they're older, so they've seen the changes from feminism, so they're not willing to admit the change. But I mean, I saw it blatantly in a comment this week where somebody said feminism means we need women to be in charge for about 200 to 300 years and then we'll reassess because men have been in charge all these years. That's what they really want with feminism now. So that's why they're starting to use these terms with equalism.
That's interesting. That doesn't seem to go with their whole MO.
Whose whole MO? Not the feminists. Feminists aren't advocating that.
Just the left in general. But
no, it's not the left. It's, I mean, what I'm saying is this is a weird part of our subculture where you to be. I mean, this is sexual virtue signaling.
Mm.
No woman in today's day and age who's young. How old is this woman? Do we know this Miss USA?
She's got to be like 23, 4, something like that.
Right, so she's between the ages of 18 and 24, right? So she's like prime meat, right?
That's how I like to refer to all women, yes.
Hey, at least I called her a woman, all right? She's in her prime years, right? She has prime desirability, right? Arguably the height of her desirability, especially as a pageant winner.
Yeah.
So no woman in that age group, in today's day and age, is going to be highly valued and highly desired if she goes around calling herself a feminist anymore. They can't be. So now they're starting to say other things, such as equalism. And that's what I'm saying. It's a weird subculture where she's being second-handed because she's worried about what other people think of her, but she's still a leftist. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. It's almost like... It's like the inverse of white knighting, basically, if you invert both aspects of that motivational spectrum.
Yeah, it's 100% the female version of white knighting. She can't sell out her own people, but what guy who's masculine, especially because you're not going to tell me that the Miss USA winner doesn't want, like, a masculine guy, right? She doesn't want one of these white knights. She wants an actual guy.
Yeah.
So what kind of actual guy is going to date a woman who calls herself a feminist in today's day and age? You're not going to want, I mean, date. I say date. They're going to want to fuck, right? We're talking about fucking here. What actual guy in this day and age is going to want to fuck a woman who calls herself a feminist? He's not going to want to. So they have to come up with other terms because at the same time, she doesn't want to alienate herself from all the women as well. So these are the terminology more, it's especially more attractive women on the internet are using.
Hmm.
Missed it by a year, by the way. She's 25. Just want to be accurate on the show. She's also 5'10".
Oh, wow. Huh.
Right. Yeah.
So she doesn't. I mean, she doesn't have to do this for me to say she's an equalist. I mean, she's outside of my height range. So, also probably from the wrong country.
From the wrong. Oh yeah, you have a type certainly. And we all know what it is. It doesn't have to be said here on the podcast. So it won't be. I have nothing else to add. You guys have pretty much covered it. I think that it's telling that it is now highly controversial to say that healthcare is a privilege, even if she didn't even mean it in the exact right way. Not surprising that the left shattered her down, still, you know, sort of just another one of those disheartening signs that I have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'd say it's more than just you can't say that healthcare is not a right anymore. I think it's just if you speak out against the general consensus, you're going to get shouted down. No matter what it is. And I mean, we see this all the time, right? We see it with movies, which is what we're going to talk about now in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I don't have anything to review this week. I think, James, you said that you want to talk a little bit about Billions Season 2.
Yeah, I just finished Billions Season 2. I mean, at least for me, it has just been such an exciting show. I know it is people sitting in rooms talking, but it is the best people sitting in rooms talking. The plot, it goes in, it goes out, it takes me to new heights. It's a magic carpet ride of pleasure the entire time.
First of all, magic carpet ride of pleasure is redundant because A Whole New World is about sex. Second of all, don't use an Aladdin metaphor for a boring ass show.
Oh my God, it's not boring at all. You have to get really into it. But it is. I mean, I watched it one night as I was going to bed, and it made me so excited I couldn't fall asleep. Like, I was up for another, like, 2 hours just because I was like, oh my God, I wish there was another episode. But I finished the last episode, and I'm Spoilers are okay, right? This has a little bit of spoilers, a little bit. No specific plot points, but kind of overarching points. Are you guys okay with that?
I'm never going to watch it.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Well, come on. Well, anyway, so so yeah, if you don't want spoilers, then just stop listening for the next 20 seconds. Bobby Axelrod, you know, does some actually bad things, actually morally bad things. And then he starts, then he, at the end, he commits himself to sort of becoming a better person. And it was just, and I really want to see where this goes. This could go so south. This could be a repudiation of selfishness, or it could be great. It could just be that, like, he emerges out like a complete hero. And so I'm really, you know, even if he turns out to be a dirtbag, the excitement of finding out where this goes is just really going to keep me holding on to this show until it breathes this last.
Daniel, anything to add? I just enjoy how the fact that you keep calling this exciting and riveting, and I'm just like, what? Okay.
It's the best people talking in rooms like you've ever seen. Like, the rooms are amazing.
Good times.
All right, let's talk shit about some other stuff.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Young Sheldon, and I wasn't very surprised that this was like over 5 minutes long, but is the prequel series to The Big Bang Theory, directed by Jon Favreau, I believe, and voiceover by Jim Parsons, who plays Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory. And it's about Sheldon's life growing up. All three trailers this week are from the networks released a bunch of first looks and trailers on the new fall season. So we could have talked about a bunch of things. So if there's one you want us to talk about next week, go ahead and tell us. We might pull in a few next week as well. These are just the ones we picked because we've talked about them before. They really stood out to us. This is also slightly the Jon Favreau edition because he directed two of these shows, I believe, or at least produced them. But this one in particular was intriguing to me, not because I thought it looked good, but just because it seemed a lot different from The Big Bang Theory. And from having watched many seasons of The Big Bang Theory, they went in a much different direction than I expected with his childhood. I didn't know he had siblings. Maybe I just didn't pay attention enough. I didn't know he had a dad in the picture. I thought he always had a single mom. They recast his mom, which I guess sort of makes sense to a certain extent.
Yeah, I anticipated they'd have to go in a different direction. I think they'd have to take it in a wildly different direction, which is also why I think they released this 5-minute thing, right? They had to show that it's not going to be The Big Bang Theory with kids. And in fact, I think I mentioned this in the thread, this looks more like a reboot of The Wonder Years than it does a prequel to The Big Bang Theory. So I thought there were touching moments in the trailer. I thought the young guy, Ian Armitage, is his name, playing the 9-year-old Sheldon, I thought he did a good job. Might have to work into it a little bit. I think I will give this an episode or two. I'm curious. So I'm going to tentatively hug this.
Hug?
James?
I hate to say this, but I'm hugging it too for basically the reasons Daniel gave. I hate The Big Bang Theory. I hate Sheldon as a character. Sheldon as a character feels like just a continuous insult to everything I am as an individual human being. but this looks cool. This looks like something that I could personally get behind. They make Sheldon like kind of less of an ass. I guess it's just because it's a kid and it's more forgivable that he act that way when he's a child as opposed to being a man child. So,
well, I assume the show has to go through the trauma that he experiences to become the jackass he is as an adult. I mean, there's a stunted growth thing, right?
Well, literally his testicles don't descend until he's mid teens. That's from the trailer.
Hey, some of us hit puberty late. Okay.
That's pretty late though.
So, James, is that a hug?
I guess.
I'm tackling this. I mean,
ooh.
The one thing I sort of liked was the scene with his dad, but I wasn't sure, you know, where his dad finally opens up and, like, admits to what happened and why they had to move and everything. But I wasn't sure about sort of the social commentary of that and everything. So, no, I'm just tackling.
Second trailer.
The Orville is Seth MacFarlane's new show, and it is a new Star Trek series? At least that's exactly what it feels like. I mean, we've progressed to the point where our parody series are as good budget-wise and production-wise as the things they're parodying. So this is basically Seth MacFarlane plays the captain of a starship in, not the Federation because they can't use that word, but basically he's Captain Kirk and their crew, and it makes fun of it.
Yeah. Wow, production value on this. I was blown away. Kind of crazy. Execution, it's Seth MacFarlane. I think if you like Seth MacFarlane and Family Guy and stuff, it looks comparable to those. I'll probably end up seeing some episodes, but there's no reason for me to seek them out purposely. I know that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just like Seth MacFarlane shows are things that I can just put on in the background if I'm doing work around the house or whatever, and I'll catch the occasional interesting joke, but for the most part, meh. So I'm going to tackle with the caveat that I will end up seeing probably the entire first season just by osmosis.
Tackle.
James?
I feel like the content of this trailer was kind of lame, but something good shined through here that's going to cause me to tentatively hug this. So that's where I'm at.
Hug?
It's really concrete. It's really descriptive as to why you're hugging it.
there's something. I like the idea. I like the idea of a parody Star Trek series. Like, you know, just think Galaxy Quest, only it's a series.
Well, that was the first point I was going to make. Isn't this already been done? Hasn't this already been done as Galaxy Quest?
I liked Galaxy Quest, though. I'd watch, you know, 30-minute installments every week of that.
Oh, I would without a doubt. I love Galaxy Quest, but that's my point. It's already been done, right?
Yeah. Never said it was original. Just said I'd watch it.
And then the second thing is, you say it's very Seth MacFarlane, and it is, and I see what you're saying, but to me, the humor felt more natural. So, you know, in the South Park episode where they make fun of Family Guy, they make fun of the fact that there's no development and the things aren't natural, and it's, you know, manatees with beach balls, right? But to me, the jokes actually felt like natural to the episode and what they were doing. It wasn't like cut jokes and randomness. So I found it a lot more amusing than I typically do Family Guy. You thought it was very similar to Family Guy in that way?
Maybe not Family Guy in particular, but just if you just take all of Seth MacFarlane's shows, you put them in a blender and you pour them out, just sort of like the average of his humor, that's just what it felt like to me. Just felt like general Seth MacFarlane humor.
Okay, maybe to me, because it was Star Trek, I was blinded. It seems like almost the idealized form of Seth MacFarlane. So we'll see. I'm going to hug this. I want to see what happens.
Hug.
I grew up on Star Trek, so maybe that's what the issue is.
Speaking of...
Final trailer.
Ooh.
We actually have a Star Trek trailer now for our final trailer. I don't know why I said final trailer. You just heard the soundbite, but that's how excited I am that it's fucking with my brain. Star Trek Discovery is the new series partially developed by Brian Fuller. We don't know how involved he actually was, but he did hand the baton off to two people. I did notice in the trailer, conspicuously, they don't really mention who's involved with it production-wise, but it seems to focus on the first woman of the show, Sonequa Martin-Green, previously of The Walking Dead, and it's from her perspective. And it's also set 10 years before the original series. So I wonder how the timeline overlaps with Enterprise. I think it's post-Enterprise, but pre-original series. And to me, it actually felt like if Brian Fuller did Enterprise, this is the good way of doing the prequel series. So it's sort of like, why are they doing another prequel series? But the production value and the visuals, if you thought they were good with the Orville, I thought they were tremendous in this.
They're clearly stunning. Just... It's unbelievable what we can do now, especially for TV shows. Just incredible. And it's only going to get better. That's kind of the equally shocking point. Nonetheless, Justin will excoriate me for this, I'm sure. I found basically nothing interesting in this trailer. Nothing. And especially the main character, I have no interest in whatsoever. She seems completely unsympathetic, uninteresting, very little character to her. I was much more interested in the side characters. Maybe that's enough to keep me in. I will, of course, give this a couple episodes, assuming I can get them. I'm not paying for CBS All Access. Assuming I can get them legally some other way, I will give it some attention, but I am not optimistic about this show at all. So, tentative hug with a likely tackle hard in the near future.
Hug?
I don't think we've ever had a hug tackle before. James?
This was kind of the opposite of the Galaxy, or the whatever the hell, the Orville movie, or the Orville show. Everything's wrong. You know, never mind. I'm not going to give any response. I give up. No. So this was the opposite of how I felt about Orville. With Orville, I wasn't that I'm not that interested in the idea, but it, like, there was something about it that looked like it could be good. This is the opposite, where I'm really interested in the idea, but then the content of the preview just was like, I didn't find that anything that interesting about the content of the preview. But it's Star Trek, so I'm going to fucking watch it. Hug.
Hug.
I mean, I actually agree with you guys more than you think. I mean, they seem to be doing stuff about, like, Vulcanism and identity and everything. Like, was she really a Vulcan? Was she wasn't? Was she not? Or grammar? Awesome. So I agree with you that there wasn't really much of a hint as to the actual conflict of the show, besides we're going to discover things. But, I mean, I'm still going to watch it, especially because it had Brian Fuller involved on some level. So I'm going to hug it.
Do we need to be cautious about Brian Fuller? I mean, this, and then I'm not watching American Gods, but I've heard some things about American Gods.
Well, look, I watched the first episode of American Gods, and I didn't want to give a review yet, but I guess since we're transitioning into this, I'll just say. The issue I saw with the first episode of American Gods is the issue I had with the book. The book was all exposition. So it's sort of like, what's the conflict here? What's going on? And I have hope that going forward, Fuller is going to actually inject some sort of a conflict, but I'm not sure.
Have you read anything about American Gods moving forward, like any of the other episodes?
No, I don't read reviews anymore because the reviews are trash. They always miss the point.
Okay, well, I'm not going to give away anything, but I will say that he certainly injects a certain something into it later anyway.
Well, I mean, there is the concern that he has gone fucking crazy leftist on Twitter, if that's what you're talking about.
I won't say anything explicit. I'm just saying that there may be some reason to be mildly cautious about Brian Fuller going forward. But,
well, yeah, because it could be social justice Trek because they put a black woman as the lead in it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's about identity and things like that?
Certainly, yes. We identified that a while ago, though.
Right, because he was super anti-Trump on Twitter. So, I mean, that's a problem with Hollywood in general, right? I mean, this isn't the direction I intended on going, but we can take a pit stop here real quick. There's this idea that we're raised on in this country, and it goes along with the idea that art is supposed to be born of pain, right? We're taught that art comes out of pain. On the same token, as an artist, your goal is not supposed to be to create great art. It's supposed to be to influence society. So, you know, Daniel, we've studied the rhetorical situation and, you know, what's your exigence? You know, what is spurring you on to speak? They have this idea that all art needs to be a response to the community that's out there and the society that's out there and the culture that's out there. So if they see this great danger of Trump, they think as Hollywood elites that it's their responsibility to create art that responds to that.
Yeah, that's potentially horrifying. Not because I have any love for Trump, as you may have heard earlier in the show, but I don't want to watch shit art, and that's usually what it results in.
Right, because they're not focused on making the art itself, they're focused on ham-fisting in their message, which ironically, isn't that what they say someone like Ayn Rand does, and that's what they critique her for?
Yeah.
All right, so last thing I want to talk about in the entertainment section, the hopeful romantic section, is something interesting happened this past week, and I'm going to post the link to the article that inspired my little conversation here. It's on the wrap, and it says, yes, your tweets can save your favorite show. And a show I really like, Timeless, was saved at the last minute. It was initially canceled, but apparently the network executives were looking at the social media buzz for the show, and it got enough social media buzz to save the show and to save it from cancellation and to get a renewal. And, you know, I've been talking about this all episode, about this idea that you can just be loud enough to socially pressure things into happening. And this is something that's sort of, there's sort of a long tradition of this. You know, Star Trek had the letter writing campaign, the original one to save it. And then when the internet started coming about and Lost was big, we saw the influence that the Lost community online had on the show. But where is the line between the same 50 people on the internet and this Twitter echo chamber and this legitimately being a metric? Should this be a legitimate metric, or do these people really have no idea how to review shows or not, or renew shows or not?
Well, the answers are not mutually exclusive. I mean, I think that executives are fairly bad at determining what is a popular show and what isn't. And I think they'll get better. They're just not used to the modern era yet. I think that's the major problem, is it's hard to determine. I mean, obviously, when Dukes of Hazzard was pulling in a 23 share, you keep it on forever, but you also only have three channels. So in the modern era, it's much harder to decipher what is good and what should stay on. There is a role for social media here, Justin. I know you're going to hate that, but there is. And it's a legitimate mechanism for having your voice heard, especially in an era when we're not writing letters. And you can see legitimate grassroots efforts to do all sorts of things, from raise money for whatever, you know, ice bucket challenge craziness, to you know, saving shows or whatever it is. And just, you have to be a sophisticated digital person to understand what is a legitimate grassroots movement and what is the same 50 people over and over again. And there are ways to do that. And I hope that the studios are getting better at and better at deciphering whether one is one and not the other. But that's all a little bit abstract, but I think there is a legitimate place.
So you're saying that it's possible to create a system that weeds out spam bots. So if I create a bunch of different ghost accounts or sock puppet accounts, and I make them so they're different enough that you don't realize they're all connected, I'm not going to pull a fast one on the studio?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, a sophisticated analysis isn't just that. It also has to do with revenue, and it has to do with, you know, merchandising and all sorts of things. And if you put these metrics together, you can make a educated guess about whether or not there is actual grassroots popularity here or whether or not it's manufactured. Additionally...
Oh, okay. So then, I want to build on that. I think you've just induced or led me to a better grassroots campaigns through social media. It used to be, you know, number of letters, or for a while they started trying to send something to the network to represent, like a symbol from the show. They would send that in. But really what they should do is, if there are that many people who support the show, they should all buy a certain amount of merchandise to show that they have the money to make this show profitable.
Yeah, that certainly could be a good grassroots effort to save something. I'll buy a specific thing or a kind of t-shirt or whatever it is.
Right, everyone go to the web store and buy a t-shirt or something.
Yeah. And it doesn't take that many people. Like, not everyone's going to do it, but the point is, like, how representative it is this audience of a greater public wanting to see this given thing? And there's some art to determining that, but I think there are legitimate metrics that you can interweave to decide whether or not to save a show or not. But it's hard. It's certainly not an exact science, not yet at least.
Well, and we've previously talked about on the show whether popularity should be the sole indicator. Isn't there a value to a network sometimes keeping a show on that isn't as popular but is really good?
Sure. Or, as we saw recently, a network canceling a show that's fairly popular because their executives don't like its message.
Ah, that is a very underhanded reference. I like it. But I think we need to continue this train wreck of an episode by going to the biggest train wreck of all. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, and now you will see the episode title. Despite Fidget Spinner's original purpose of counteracting distractions, their current popularity is probably resulting in a more distracted general public than before. This is a shower thought. And I included this, so don't say God damn it, James. I included this because where the fuck did fidget spinners come from? How long have they been around? They seem to have been super popular in the last week or something, right?
It is funny, the convergence of things and how that happens. I've seen these around for a while now, but the media has sort of started to pay attention recently, which is what we're all seeing. I don't know where they came from, but I guess the idea is that it's a thing that you can spin between your fingers, and it's just like keeping your hands busy. There was something... The thing I originally saw with this had nothing to do with the spinner, but there was a Kickstarter campaign for something called a fidget cube, which was basically a worthless cube that had buttons, switches, dials, and other things on it that you could just fidget with in your hand, and they raised hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever, of course.
Oh, I remember that. Did we talk about that on here?
I don't know if we talked about it, because I don't remember about anything we've ever said on this show, but I do remember bringing it up at some point to other human beings who may have been you. So,
yeah, we definitely had a conversation about it, and that's sort of the same way I feel. I feel the same way about that I do about this fidget spinner. Like, before things were invented to do this, like, didn't we find ways of like amusing ourselves, like play with paper or paper clips or things like that? Like, why do we need to buy things to amuse us?
Pens are a big one.
Yeah.
The answer is we have too much money, and we have nothing to do with it. That's it. We're too affluent. We need the sweet meteor of death to take us down a peg. I'm mostly joking, but that's... we had those things, but now it's just, you know, someone's trying to capitalize on a market niche, and they did it. This has been going on forever. This isn't just an our generation thing. It just happens to be that our generation likes stupider things than previous generations. Aside from the pet rock, which will never in any circle... be dethroned as the most worthless thing ever sold for a huge amount of money.
I was about to bring up pet rocks. Right?
It's a rock with googly eyes on it. I have an itching.
Is that your response, James?
Yeah, that sums up my contribution to this Reddit.
I do have a question, though, and maybe this is just mass psychology and thus Justin will revel in it, but
yes,
are we more fidgety than previous generations such that we need specific things to accommodate our fidgetiness, or are we the same amount of fidgety and we just have more money to spend on worthless crap?
I would say we're more fidgety because of smartphones, and what I mean by that is we're constantly stimulated. Like, it used to be, I mean, think about this, right? So I'm sitting at the doctor's office the other day for a checkup, and I'm on my phone, like, reading stuff and watching stuff. But when I was a kid, what did I do when I was at the doctor waiting?
I read highlights.
I did read highlights, too. So maybe that's it. That's an argument against me, right? That we weren't more fidgety. But I think it was that we used to be able to just sit in silence and be okay and entertain yourself, but now we always have to be doing something.
I have some sympathy for your argument, and I find in myself as well, I have to tell myself to not do something, some additional thing. Meaning, like, sometimes I go for walks, and I'm so used to having earbuds in that I don't even notice it anymore, and I'm just playing podcasts or audiobooks all day. And sometimes it's like, oh, I need to cut this out, and I need to go for a half-hour walk where I'm just listening to, I hate to say it, nature, whatever's going on. And not have some sort of extra stimulus. And that's good for us. But otherwise, it's like I'm watching TV, and I'm on my laptop, and then I'm answering texts on my phone.
Well, yeah, 100%. Where, like, a lot of stuff I watch on TV now, I'm playing games on my phone. Or, like, if I have to put something in the microwave for 5 minutes, I will go do something else in that time rather than just, like, wait and relax for 5 minutes because it's, like, wasted time.
Yeah. So some of that is good, I would say. Some of it is... fidget inducing. Any thoughts on that, James?
It's a loop.
I notice that something I do is sometimes I just really like overstimulate myself. Like I'll be playing video games and listening to podcasts, and then like during, like, in between rounds of the video games. Like, there's this, you know, there's the load screen, which actually on modern video games takes a long time now, where everyone's picking their gear and their characters and people can't get their shit together. So then I'm, like, washing the dishes while listening to the podcast, like, while waiting for the game to, and then I just find that, like, and I do this over the course of the entire day. I you know, I'm either tutoring or I'm writing or I'm taking notes on philosophy or I'm reading. And then when I get home to relax, I do this. And then at the end of the day, I'm just like, holy shit. Like, I never took any kind of break. I just was just stimulated the entire time. So, you know, so I like one thing you can do that, that really, if you find yourself doing the same thing, that really helps is meditation. And that just really allows you to just kind of be more present and, like, not take stuff for granted anymore. Instead of just like, oh, I have to do this. Oh, no, I got to do that. You can slow down and actually enjoy stuff.
I agree. I've never been one to advocate for, like, meditation. I thought it was hippie and shit. But when it gets to the point that you're
– it's totally ranking, not hippie. It doesn't have to be.
When it gets to the point that you're ranking your stimulation, like – oh, well, you know, this is something I need to be fully focused on, so I can't do this until I have free time. Or here's a bunch of shows I can put on in the background to stay stimulated while I'm doing other stuff. That seems to be a problem to me.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, fuck your fidget spinners. I can't believe we haven't brought up in this segment about fidgeting and, you know, distractions, whatever, masturbation once. We haven't brought it up once.
Yeah. That was the joke at the top of the show.
Well, no, it was your mom. That's okay. Anyway,
it's not masturbation, but it's still a sexual joke.
Well, I want it to be about masturbation.
I'll make a masturbation joke sooner rather than later.
Thank you.
Next Reddit. What's a situation you can't understand until you've experienced?
Masturbating. There.
I was going to build to that, but thanks for taking away my punchline. I appreciate that. James, you were just derailing everything this episode.
I know.
Yeah.
I didn't let you have your build up for the masturbation
build
joke.
Build up in your release.
Yeah, I mean, it's more exciting that way.
Yeah.
No, the reason I included this question is, I think it has to do with the word understand. And the reason I'm saying that is I am a very experiential person, and I can understand something intellectually. But until I've actually experienced it, I can't really understand it in the sense of knowing it and knowing what to actually do. It doesn't become real to me until I experience it. I've had a lot of things in life that people are like, oh, yeah, just do this, and do that. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But it wasn't until I actually did it that I was like, oh, that's how you do it, and that's how it works.
So, like, sex?
Yeah, no, 100%. Sex is one of those things where it's like, well, this does this and blah, blah, blah. And then you do it and you're like, oh, now I understand it.
The reason when you were saying that, I pictured a guy with a chart, like in a tie. And he was just like, he had a stick and he was pointing at various parts of the body. It's like, this sun does this. I don't know.
That would have been a better sex talk than the non-sex talk I got.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But no, I mean, isn't that what happened in like biology class in middle school when they taught you things? They just showed you the anatomy and everything?
Yeah, basically. It's a horrible, horrible way to learn anything. Yeah. So, I don't know. There's so many answers to this question. It's just like life, basically. It's like, you can't really understand things until you've experienced them. But I guess from a different level, and from a different understanding of the word understand, you know, going through a marriage ceremony was radically different in the experience of it than it was seeing it on television or seeing other people get married. And I didn't think it would mean that much, but it actually meant a whole fuck ton when I actually went through it. So that was the first thing that came to mind for me.
James?
I couldn't think of one for this. Like, I seriously couldn't. I feel like maybe I'm just boring. I was gonna just say sex, but that just seemed a little too obvious.
Justin, did you have anything else other than sex?
Exciting. Well, no, to me, it's everything. Like, I was being serious. I'm a very experiential learner, and that's part of why I brought this up, is like, It's just everything I do until I've actually done it, I can't understand it. I mean, even today, somebody was talking to me about, like, a schedule. And they were like, are you available at this time, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, can you show me visually the schedule? Because right now this is too, like, abstract for me. I need to actually look at the schedule and understand.
Yeah. I think the Reddit answers are revealing. They're almost universally horrifying, by the way. Autoerotic asphyxiation, a kick to the balls, fighting, sleep paralysis, probably wow. Heroin, dying. Someone said being an adult. What the fuck?
They said adulting, really?
Yes, and getting catcalled. Really?
Oh, you fuck off. You
can't understand being catcalled until you've had that experience.
Yeah. For me, being an adult was the opposite of that. Like, I was told it was going to be really hard, and then once I was an adult, I was just like, "What? Like, what was the hard part?" So I guess that's an example of something I didn't understand until I experienced, because I was just led to believe it was supposed to be really hard, and it never was.
Yeah, and that was a constant refrain from my mother, who I love dearly, but she kept saying, like, you better enjoy high school because it's the best time of your life, and then after that, it's all downhill. It's like, no, not fucking true at all. At all. High school blew, and right now is amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole refrain that college is the best years of your life, right? That's a whole other discussion, but I hate that as well. So let's do the last Reddit. This one's for you, Daniel. Yay. I just pointed at, like, the sky as if you were over there. You received a letter from Hogwarts and the Jedi Council on the same day. Who do you turn down, and what do you say in your decline letter?
Oh. Turning down Hogwarts? Fuck. Dear Dumbledore, shove your wand up your ass. I get a lightsaber now. Sincerely, go fuck yourself.
He'll like that, though, shoving the wand up his ass. That's
why I did it that way. I mean, look, to be objective, there are some really cool things about being a wizard. But there are many sort of like terrible sort of, what am I trying to say? Like accoutrement to being a wizard. It's like you can fly, but you're on a fucking broom. You can cast spells as long as you have a piece of wood in your hand. You know, it's too much.
I can cast spells as long as I have a piece of wood in my hand.
Oh, masturbation joke.
That was not a masturbation joke. It was a sex joke.
I prefer to think of it as a masturbation joke. So, I mean, 100% Jedi here. I mean, there are some downsides to that as well. Never being able to have, you know, emotional attachments again. You know, you don't get to fly except in cool spaceships, which is, it's kind of cool. But you just can't. There is no arguing against getting a lightsaber. It's not possible. There are no arguments. I won't entertain any.
Well, then let me ask you a question. The Jedi thing? No romantic attachments? Can you still have sex?
Good question. I assume no. I assume...
Oh, then hands down Hogwarts. Because I could bang Hermione at some point if I go to Hogwarts. But if I'm a Jedi, I might as well cut my dick off. So, Hogwarts. And the answer I would give is, sorry, Jedi Council, I like my dick too much. Sincerely, fuck you.
Yeah.
But not really, because you can't fuck.
I would, for all the reasons given against the Jedi Council, I would choose, I feel like if I got one letter of acceptance from the Jedi Council and, like, one letter of acceptance to, like, law school... on the like at the same day, I would just go to law school. Like, you don't even need to, you know, dangle wizardry in front of me. Obviously, I'd choose Hogwarts, but even if it was just, you know, oh, you can go to, you know, you can become an accountant. Like, okay, I'll be an accountant instead of a Jedi.
Who needs law school when you have the power to change men's minds with the wave of your hand?
That Who one's needs pretty
accounting
cool.
When if someone comes to collect a bill, you can just cut them in half.
What good is the ability to change people's mind with my hand if I can't use it to have sex? And I don't just mean my hand, I mean the ability.
What?
you're all missing the forest for the trees. You get to be a fucking Jedi. A Jedi.
This is the penis you're looking for. If I can never say that, what is the point of being a Jedi?
Yeah, the Force is strong with this one.
What is the point of having a lightsaber if you can't make size jokes?
It's true. That's no moon.
I'm just saying, I mean, I don't know. So, James, are you saying you're anti-Jedi Council too?
Absolutely.
Bunch
of lasers. I'd be a wizard.
Yeah, and I mean, Daniel, having a Patronus? That's not cool.
Again, I don't speak gay lingo, but whatever that is, I'm out.
Dude, you're talking about changing men's minds with your hand. You can cast, you know, all sorts of bewitchment spells on people in Harry Potter. You can, you know, erase their memory. You can, you know, torture them, you know, for as long as you want. You can, you know, there's one spell, they just die. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. They just die. You can read people's minds. You can store your memories in a jar. You can
as long as you have a stick handy.
You know, you're going to have to give up email, though, because you got to send your correspondence by owl now. That kind of sucks, but still, you still got your dick, I imagine. I don't remember any sex in Harry Potter, but I don't remember any lack of sex either, so.
You people.
I assume that's still there.
You people disappoint me wildly.
I'm just glad James is on my side. I thought I was going to be on an island on this one.
No, fine. Dude, I like sex too.
Fine. I will be the lone Jedi in this group. I'm fine with that.
You're the last Jedi on this
podcast.
That's
right. I mean, makes me better than both of you, but that's fine. I can deal with that.
It's all right. I'll be fucking while you're the last Jedi. It's okay. All right. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
What did I learn this trip? I learned that Justin picks news stories exclusively so he can hate on the things he hates.
You stole mine. I mean,
hasn't that been the premise of this show since day one? Like, why, like, we're like 150 episodes in and you people are shocked? Like,
no, I mean, what I learned this week is that you just pandered to yourself way more than usual this time.
Justin panders to no audience except the man in the mirror.
Like, why? I don't understand why people are shocked about this. Like,
I don't know either.
Have you met me?
It's true. What did you learn this week, Justin?
I learned that you hate sex.
Yes, that's what I was saying. You know what? To answer, I wasn't going to dignify the comment about the sex thing with the Jedi, but now I have to, which is that any good Jedi, any powerful Jedi we learn, eventually just tells the Jedi Council after millions of credits have been spent training him to go fuck themselves, and then he goes rogue and does whatever he wants, and that's what I plan to do, gentlemen. I am the next right. Anakin Skywalker.
So you're going to be a Sith, basically. You're a Sith.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to say it out loud, but...
He'll be one of those rationally egoistic Sith.
That's right. I'll be a gray Jedi. That's what I'll be. There we go. Solved.
No, I would like to be clear. If they introduce the concept of gray Jedi later on in Star Wars, I would 100% pick Jedi over Hogwarts. If the gray Jedi becomes a real thing. But I am not going to commit to the Jedi on the speculation that they will one day have the number one draft pick in the NBA. Now, that's a really obscure reference.
What?
But no, I'm not going to commit to the Jedi on the speculation that there could be gray Jedi one day.
If they're not going to be, I'll fucking create them. That's right. That's right. So, why don't you weigh in, Midsiders? Tweet at us. Are you Team Hogwarts or Team Jedi? And there is a correct answer. You can tweet at the Midside, facebook.com/TheMidside, Snapchat, you know, whatever team you're on, just tattoo it to your dick and snap that to Justin. He'll do a tally. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes.
That's also why I have to be Hogwarts over Jedi. If we're writing it, if we're tattooing it on our dick, I have to be Hogwarts over Jedi.
I get it. It's hilarious. Anyway. No, I'm not going to go there. Okay, so... You can go to midside.com/podcast. They're all the better episodes we've ever done there. Basically anyone before this one.
This is like the worst episode we've ever done.
You can also listen to back episodes on iTunes or Google Play. You go there, click the subscribe button, and also leave us a 5-star review. I know this episode didn't particularly warrant it, but nonetheless, we would like a 5-star review, and you can tell us Jedi or Hogwarts. We're also syndicated through Liberty.me. Really appreciate that. Libertarians treat us well, so we like them for that. Thank you, Liberty.me. And then, of course, Patreon.com/TheMidSide. Now, Patreon is not a Hogwarts thing, although it sounds like it. It is, in fact, a platform that allows you to support this show monetarily. Basically, what you do is you say, I would like to give some amount of money every time these fellas create a quote-unquote episode. Unfortunately, we can't control for quality. Sorry about that. But it's like $1 an episode, $1.50 an episode, 50 cents an episode, whatever you want to do, and that helps us keep the lights on of our lightsabers. That's right. It's fucking awesome. By the way, the other day, Faiza said the sexiest thing she's ever said to me, which is, let's watch Star Wars. So, just want to point that out, give a shout out to my wife.
What does that have to do with plugging the podcast?
Just had to slip that in there. I was so proud of it. So it was like a pivotal moment in our relationship.
Surprised you proposed before that.
She had to watch some of them before we got married. That was a prerequisite. But this was an actual her initiating saying that she wanted to watch it.
Wait, was that really a prerequisite?
I mean, I didn't say it out loud, but it was absolutely a prerequisite. She had to watch some of the Star Wars movies, yes.
All the shit everyone gives me for being all the shit, and that's one of your prerequisites?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't live with someone for the rest of my life who's never seen Star Wars. That's ludicrous.
All right, I'm just going to go to pop punk shows from now on to look for girls.
Fine, you can do whatever you want. Notice that she did watch Star Wars when we got married. So,
women, not girls, women.
Whatever. So, thanks everyone. Appreciate you tuning in. Next week will be something other than this. Hopefully, it'll be better.
Oh, it'll be much better. We're going to have Don Watkins on.
That's
next
right.
Episode.
Don Watkins, our favorite Don, will be on the show next week. And that'll be awesome. Be an interview with Don Watkins, and he's going to stay and play Woker Joke, right?
He's going to stay for the whole episode.
Sexy.
Special guest host.
That's right. So, awesome. So, be sure to tune in next week. Tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend. And tell an enemy, too. Tell someone who picks Hogwarts to listen to this show. But
yeah, apparently we really chart with the Harry Potter demographic.
That's right.
I'm sure Juan Dotkin played for Harry Potter.
Emphasis on Harry. So,
wow.
That's it. Love you. See you next time. Bye. I can't even speak anymore.
I would like to just, before I go into my outro, point out that I thought the Harry Potter joke that Daniel just made earlier and just left it on the table.
Are you saying that it was a joke that was too bad even for you to tell?
Yes.
You should have just combined both of the joke and instead of Hogwarts, just call it Harry Hog.
That's right. And the show has reached a new low.
You're welcome.
Oh, this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelzes, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
I'm sorry!